Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect. This podcast was recorded Wednesday, July 2nd at 1:36 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like this time, the tax cuts will pay for themselves. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who say they want to cut the federal deficit and then pass a law that expands it by $3 trillion. So much for that kids and grandkids rhetoric. Anyway, I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, a well-timed sports team sale announcement gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, with fond memories of the late Jim Siegel's biannual state budget impact story in the Columbus Dispatch, thanks to our brand new two-year state budget, if you make more than $100,000 a year, you're getting a 20% income tax cut. If you own the Cleveland Browns, you can lay claim to $600 million from the state's unclaimed funds account without filling out the paperwork. There is a lot more in the state budget, but those votes were the big headlines as Governor DeWine signed it into law this week and also made 67 line item vetoes. His vetoes were only mildly surprising, only mildly controversial. He nixed a plan to allow counties to reduce property taxes if school districts have a lot of money in their savings account. He vetoed a mandate that libraries put LGBT material out of reach of minors. He vetoed a provision that would have cut funding to homeless shelters that, quote, promote or affirm social gender transition. Those are among the 67 line item vetoes the governor made before he signed the budget or as he signed the budget. I'm not quite sure how it works. Anyway, here to discuss the end of this state budget process, what it means for Ohioans, and the politics of it all, I am joined by WOSU News Director Mark Ferencek. Mark, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hello, Mike.
This is your first chance.
First chance.
At snark.
At snark. Exactly.
We don't call ourselves cynics here on Snollygoster. We are realists.
That's right.
That's right. Anyway, you know, I hate talking about the state budget because, you know, frankly, very few people outside, they should, but very few people outside of Capitol Square really care. I mean, it affects everything we do, of course, or like a lot of what we do. It's 3,156 pages long, which I think is on the short side for the state budget. I've always heard it was like 5,000 pages long. Anyway, it's hard to nail down exactly how much money the state budget totals. Here's the number we all use is the total general revenue fund budget is $90.5 billion over 2 years. But that includes $30 billion in federal money. So the state two-year budget is $60 billion.
Correct.
It's all mind-numbing.
Yeah.
you've covered a lot of these budgets. You covered city council budgets.
Lots of city budgets and things like that. Yeah. So it's still, like you said, this is what it affects people, affects your day-to-day life, especially when you're dealing with changing the state income tax rate, considering what the governor did in terms of vetoing another number of the property tax provisions that were in the original budget. And also, people certainly were paying attention to the $600 million that's now going to be taken out of the unclaimed funds pot. To go to pay for the new Brown Stadium in suburban Brook Park.
Yes, but those things all have one thing in common. They all involve money.
Lots of money.
But the state budget often doesn't involve just money. There are policy things in there and everything else. It's just that's why you have to pay attention to those 3,156 pages is because really this is the time when state lawmakers – do a lot of their policy work. It's not just money work. It's policy work.
Tons of policy. So, but again, it affects libraries. It affects schools. It affects any number of things. So that's why it certainly still is worth paying attention to. But yeah, the numbers do get mind-numbing, but it affects day-to-day lives, and that's why people need to, as much as possible, pay attention to what they're doing at the State House.
All right, the big takeaway out of this budget was this kind of cropped up kind of late in the process. It wasn't really up for debate until the Senate, which is third in line in presenting a budget, presented their budget. That is this big income tax cut. It comes about because the legislature and Governor DeWine now, after signing it, has flattened Ohio's income tax rate. Stay with me now. Trigger alert. Numbers coming up. The state up until this week had two income tax rates. If you made less than $26,000 a year, you didn't pay any income tax. You still don't pay any income tax. If you made between $26,000 and $100,000 a year, you paid 2.75% of your income to the state of Ohio. If you made $100,000 a year or more, you paid 3.5% to the state of Ohio. So it was a bit of a progressive income tax rate. The state over the years has reduced the number of income tax brackets, and that we were down to basically right. Two if you don't count the $26,000 a year folks. But anyway, no more. It's all 2.75. So what that amounts is, if you made $26,000 or less, no change. If you make $26,000 and $100,000, no change. But if you make more than 100 grand a year, you see your taxes drop by 20%.
Right.
It's a small number, but it's not an insignificant number.
It's not insignificant. And I looked it up. I think at least 20% of Ohio's households make $100,000 or more a year. So this is going to affect any number of households. Now, again, so what is the what's in the rainy day fund now with the state?
It's full. I know that. That's
it
all
is
I know.
Full, right. Yes. But how much in terms of revenue loss is this going to mean too? And also, who benefits from this and why did they decide to change the rate? That's the thing.
Yeah, the estimates are it's at least $1 billion. Mm-hmm. I've heard estimates from $1.1 billion to $1.5 billion. I know the Senate did cut a lot of areas of the budget to try to find that money. They eliminated some tax loopholes here and there to find that money. So they did make it work. So I don't think it's going to – we can't run a deficit in the state.
Right. Now,
unlike our friends in D.C.
Correct.
Can just keep piling that debt on. But here are the real dollars benefit. Someone making $200,000 a year, they will save $1,500 a year in income taxes.
Right.
You know – it's a couple flights of vacation.
I was going to say that helps for vacation costs and certainly for any number of grocery runs. But that's the question. What are people going to do with this extra money too?
Now, if you're making $1 million a year, you're going to save $7,500. Again, if you're making $1 million, $7,500 is not much.
Correct. Right.
But the whole argument is, if we lower the income tax, flatten the income tax, all these millionaires are going to move to Ohio.
Yeah.
That's not even going to pay their moving costs.
Correct. So are they going to move from Florida back to Ohio or Texas back to Ohio or anything like that? Yeah.
Are you surprised that now Governor DeWine has said, you know, our tax rate's fine. It's not really affecting our growth opportunities. Mm-hmm. That was before this
right.
tax cut and tax and flattening. You surprised? There was some speculation he might veto this.
Yeah, I think – but I can't imagine him, because of the political climate we're in, vetoing a tax decrease, a tax rate decrease like this, especially in this state, the way the legislature is configured right now. I seriously did not think that was going to happen.
Yeah, he is a Republican governor.
Yes, exactly.
And he's a more reasonable Republican, we call him. But he still is for lower taxes,
yes.
less regulation,
right.
less government.
Right. And that's why he was not going to veto this.
Exactly. Yeah. He did raise taxes very early on, the gas tax.
Yes.
And that did not go over well, but he pushed it through. He got it through. He didn't get as big a one as he wanted, but he did get it through.
Right. So again, I think you can also do this at this time again because of the rainy day fund situation too. It's not like it was in, 2010 when it was. How much was in there then?
Oh, it was 79 cents.
Yes,
wasn't it John Kasich kept saying 79 cents?
Something like that, yeah.
He neglects to point out that it was raining.
You're right, exactly.
It was the Great Recession of 2008.
Yes, that was exactly it.
Ted Strickland always points out the rainy day fund was empty because
right. it was raining.
Yes. So it makes no sense to have this thing if you're not going to use it when you need it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just surprised that You know, Governor DeWine wanted to increase taxes. He wanted to increase the cigarette tax for the child tax credit. So kids 6 years and 6 years old and younger, families would have gotten $1,000 per child every year. I mean, why not negotiate with the legislature on that? Not maybe not raise the cigarette tax, but if they can afford $1 billion tax cut for folks making $100,000 a year.
Right. Yeah, and again, I don't know enough about any discussions that may have happened between that to see if that was even feasible or, you know, pushing that farther. But, I mean, it's a good point. Why not?
Yeah. Bottom line is, even if he did veto it, it passed with a veto-proof majority. And the the lawmakers certainly would have overridden that
I think. Yeah. Right. And that's a question about what any number of these vetoes, too, which we're going to get to, is that how much of a chance do they have in overriding the vetoes? It's three-fifths in each house, right?
Yeah. And the other big tax issue is property taxes. Right. I mean, it's actually probably a bigger deal than income taxes because we have seen our property taxes in Ohio over the past 3 years increase on average 25 to 30%. I think the median is like 26, 27%. So when that happens, lawmakers are getting calls from their constituents and constituents are saying, you got to do something. And they tried to do something.
Right.
They tried to make it so counties could pull back school taxes if schools had too much money in their rainy day fund or in their savings accounts.
Yes.
And he vetoed that.
Yeah.
So he vetoed all the property tax provisions.
And he said it was too quick of a – it would have meant too much of a turnaround for schools to try to deal with that immediately. But, people are looking for relief. But it was just the best way to accomplish this. And also it would be interesting to find out, though – depending on what district you're in, what is the carryover? What is the surplus that they do have? Because a number of school districts have still been and will be continuing to look for tax increases to pay for growing enrollments. And Olentangy is one of the first ones that comes to mind with something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the argument against this was if you're going to make school districts spend on their savings accounts, they may not spend it wisely.
Correct.
Now, the theory is they're hoarding money and they don't really need to ask for new taxes if you have all this money in reserve. So,
right. But also, you know, there was an argument about, well, if this happens, that they're going to have to ask for smaller increases, which is going to be, you know, more difficult to make up any kind of deficit here.
Yeah, it's just these were all sort of token. There were some other things, changing, you know, doing away with certain kinds of levies, also changing the millage calculation. Yeah. It gets really complicated, really fast. But these were all kind of token changes around the edges of the property tax issue.
I guess the question is, too, what does it say about DeWine and what his priorities are, at least in terms of these types of issues and with the legislature? And he felt that, again, he's probably getting tons of pressure, obviously, from school districts who didn't want it. So that's why he did what he did. Now, again, in terms of overriding some of these, what's that going to look like?
Yeah, we'll have to see. Buttoning up our tax discussion, this is not going away. Vivek Ramaswamy, right now you have to say, is the favorite to become our next governor. He's suggested doing away with property taxes. Right. He's walked that back because it really is kind of a crazy idea.
Right.
But there's a ballot issue, possibly on the ballot next November, not this coming November, but the following November, that would do away with property taxes.
Right.
Give voters a chance to do away with taxes. Mm-hmm. They tend to vote yes.
Right. But what about, I mean, is there any kind of a movement to get rid of the state income tax once if and when he gets into office?
That's the income tax.
That's the income tax. And you can't get rid of income taxes and property taxes.
Breathing taxes. What can we tax?
You know? Or it's like either no services or your sales tax is going to be 20% or something like that. Yeah. So, what is the option for school districts if you were to totally get rid of property taxes? What would your local income tax look like?
Yeah, it would
like
have
then?
To be income tax.
Sure.
You can't support schools on a local sales tax.
Correct. Yeah.
It's going to have to be income taxes, corporate taxes. But if you don't have any corporations in your town or your district,
correct.
I mean, this really is sort of, you know, screaming for a major overhaul.
Yes.
Because we talked about it in the newsroom today. We have so many government entities in this state. We have how many school districts we have in this state? This is terribly inefficient.
Hundreds of school districts, right. I mean, it's like, I don't know how many Cuyahoga County has, for example. Used to be the most populous county, isn't anymore, but every community basically has their own school district up there. Stark County has close to 20. I mean, we have, again, these large districts in our area, which is part of the situation too. These were all farm districts.
Yep.
And now they're big suburban districts with growing populations. And how do you keep up with enrollment when there's so much of a tax burden being put on homeowners right now?
And that's just the school taxes on
your
property tax bill.
That's just the school taxes.
You have your township fire taxes.
Yes.
You have MRDD, for developmentally disabled folks. I forget what they call it now. You have
Metro Parks.
Metro Park.
Zoo.
The zoo.
Right.
There's so many things on that tax bill. It's just, then you have, I mean, there has to be a way to, I don't, but politically, it's really hard to change that.
Correct. And again, how it's not practical to just eliminate property taxes. Something would have to give in a big way, or it would have to be made up in some way that people would not be very happy with, probably, either.
Safe to say, though, in the next year and a half, in this race for governor, these will probably be the big issues.
Yes.
Because the legislature just now, even though it's not a huge amount of money, passed a tax cut for the rich.
Yes.
Donald Trump in Congress appears to be on the verge of passing a major tax cut or extending a tax cut that benefits mainly the wealthy at the expense of folks on Medicaid and food stamps. So this is going to be the issue of the next year and a half, 2 years.
Right. And we still have issues, you know, that are still prominent here, certainly in Franklin County, Columbus, and elsewhere in the country with income inequality.
Yep.
And if you have so many people who are working many, many hours, whether it be 2, 3, 4 jobs, and you can't get health care, you can't get SNAP benefits, or if they're reduced, it's going to be a very, very big political issue.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk about the Cleveland Browns, not their chances of making the playoffs, but how they're going to get $600 million in basically government money. When we come back.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. The Cleveland Browns are big winners in the state budget process. They are going to get, thanks to the legislature and to Governor DeWine, who signed it into law, they will get $600 million from the unclaimed funds account. An account I don't think any of us, we all knew it was there.
Yes.
We didn't know it was worth $5 billion.
No, that was right. that's a whole other different thing. And everybody was searching to see if yourself or if your relatives had any money coming to them. And I found, not for me, but I found relatives who had passed away who still have money in there. So apparently now going to pay for, or at least help pay for, a stadium on the former Ford engine plant site in suburban Brook Park.
Yes, the way it stands now is the Cleveland Browns will be the first ones to claim these unclaimed funds, $600 million, to help pay for the construction of that stadium. They're down the road, I think there's $400 million, which is for other stadium projects, arena projects around the state. And then there's another bunch of money, I think another $400 million or so, that will go to other projects, perhaps like, you know, symphony halls, venues around the state. And that this was very unpopular among voters. It's like 60-40, don't give these billionaire owners any tax money. But this passed easily, and Governor DeWine did not veto it.
No.
Even though Dave Yost, the attorney general, said veto it. It's threatened with a lawsuit saying, really, this isn't even state money. This is unclaimed funds money. It's not our money yet.
And again, I don't know what the relationship is like between DeWine and the Haslams. Obviously, they were able to talk any number of people into doing this. The Haslams are worth at least $8 billion. They're apparently paying for half of the stadium costs, which would be $1.2 billion out of their pockets, with you know, the public paying the rest, $600 million with the unclaimed funds. And they're looking for another $600 million from local government up there in Cuyahoga County. Isn't too happy about the situation.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen up there. But it's like, again, they were going to do a bond package with this. And now they're going to dip into this. And how many other, again, sports entities in the state are going to be looking for similar types of deals?
The Bengals have already got a stadium plan. The Blue Jackets announced last week that they need $400 million to fix up an arena that they only paid $275 million for.
Right. 175. Yeah.
175.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's more than double.
Yeah, more than double.
To put a front porch on the house. You could build a... Anyway, yeah. it's another instance where, you know, again, if you're a Democrat in this state, right. You can run on this.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure that's going to happen. Again, not the least of which is, you know, the Browns have not had a home playoff game since they came back in 1999. So people joke about the wisdom of this in many other ways. But again, it would have been less expensive for them to fix up the current stadium. This is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And any number of sports franchise owners, including the Haslams, can certainly afford to pay for this out of their own pockets. This doesn't even include the cost, if I remember correctly, for all the infrastructure that's going to be needed in terms of road improvements, freeway improvements, everything else,
which
is going to be even more public money.
Yeah. So back to the vetoes. The vetoes, like I said, 67. These vetoes really were not huge surprises. Mm-hmm. He did tend to veto a number of culture war issues, mm-hmm. the libraries having to put LGBT mm-hmm. materials away from mm-hmm. minors. There was some other, there was a provision where the state was going to prohibit homeless shelters from getting state money if they affirmed mm-hmm. LGBT gender identities. Mm-hmm. So do you think the legislature even bothers trying to override these vetoes? Because they weren't huge.
I don't think so. I think if they're going to try to override any, again, it would be some of the property tax ones. Yeah. But I think with these types of issues, no. And again, it speaks to what, it's important to DeWine to be able to show that he thinks these are issues that he is in favor of keeping some of these things. And again, he's with the library one, I think he was mentioning, you know, parents need to be involved.
Yep.
And not to have something like this.
This was DeWine's last budget. If he was not a lame duck governor before July 1st, he is now.
Right.
What do you think he has in store for the rest of his term? How does he govern now that he's truly got nothing to lose, really?
Yeah, but I mean, that's just it. Is he going to really change who he is in this last, you know, year plus?
Yeah.
How much will he challenge the Trump folks, so to speak? How much is he going to try to carve his own path? How much is he going to continue to push Jim Tressel on any number of things to try to keep his name on the minds of voters if Tressel stops mulling and decides that he wants to get into this race? And if that does happen, is he going to throw his support behind him?
Yeah, I mean, it would be out of character because mm-hmm. he's always very sort of he's a lower key guy. He always talks about the respecting the branches of government right. and the process and things like that. But he's running against a party that is right. throwing that stuff out the window.
Correct. So will he try to push the party, at least in this state, a little bit in a different direction? He certainly can try that, but is he going to do that?
Yeah.
Because things do stand where they are, but between this time now and this time next year, how much are things going to change where mm-hmm. that may play a part in that too?
One thing to watch I've heard from a couple different people is capital punishment. He may try to make a stand on that in his last mm-hmm. couple of years and that he could – you know, not pardon, mm-hmm. but to commute the sentences of those on death row.
Right. And he just recently, again, delayed the execution dates for three more people, again, pushing those back, which he's continued to do. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a good point. By the end of his term, will he just, again, commute that?
That would be a bold move. Mm-hmm. It would anger a lot of people, but that would certainly be a bold move. Mm-hmm. Mark Fierenchek, WOSU's news director. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past half fortnight. For that, we go back to billionaire sports team owners. We mentioned that on Monday, Governor DeWine signed the budget and left alone a plan to give the Cleveland Browns $600 million to help them build that new dome stadium just outside of Cleveland. Well, the owners of the Browns, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, Forbes magazine puts their net worth at $8.5 billion, as Mark mentioned. So, more than a few people feel they have the resources to build their own domed stadium for the Browns. Well, the Haslams are also the majority owners of the Columbus Crew, the Major League Soccer team that plays at a fairly new stadium in Columbus, which also received some taxpayer support. Well, the day after Mike DeWine signed the $600 million subsidy for the Haslams and the Browns, the news outlet Sportico reported the Haslams were selling 10% of their stake in the Crew to another owner. If you do the math, the Crew are worth an estimated $900 million, so 10% would be $90 million going back to the Haslams. It's probably a fairly routine business deal for a billionaire, but it's pretty shrewd to disclose it the day after the governor finalizes the state subsidy for their domed stadium. For that, the Haslams get our Snolligoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snolligoster, part of the NPR network. As always, try to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snolligoster from WOSU Public Media.